Hello, hello. Welcome back to Front Page Dub for 2025. I'm back on the mic. It's your host, Cody Ojeda, joined today only by Annabelle Banfield with it's been a straight swap. Matt now taking his break. Annabelle back from her extended leave. Annabelle, how are you doing and how's Europe?
It was very good, Cody. I had a good time. Saw a bit of football as well. Got myself a few jerseys and things, so I'm happy. By the end of it, it was good to come back to Australia, get out of the coats and the scarves and all that, you know, back in t-shirts. So yeah, happy to be back and back on the podcast.
Yeah, I could imagine the jerseys would burn a hole into your bank account and it'll be put out pretty quickly by the weather. Considering what's going on over there, it is freezing at this time of year. And as Matt said on our last recording, you've enjoyed a trip over to Europe purely to watch Ashley Maynard-Brewer play for Charlton Athletic.
I did see that. There you go. It's funny, at the game, people, you know, heard we're Aussies and, you know, they said to us, "You're not here for him, are you?" And we went, "Oh, no, we're not here for him. We used to live in the area." And they're like, "Well, you didn't fly 24 hours just to watch this nonsense, did you?" Well, nonsense probably wasn't the word they used, if I'm honest with you, Cody. But, wasn't a great game, the Charlton game.
You know you're allowed to, like, drop a few swear words on this podcast. If they say it was shit, then you can say it's shit.
I'm too used to working around the kids. Yeah, no, they're like, "Surely you're not here to watch this shit." And I was like, no, we're here for other stuff too, not just Charlton. But that was probably the worst of our games. And then I saw United Girls beat Crystal Palace, which was good. And then I saw the United Boys be humiliated at home by Newcastle, which was less than good. Did my Old Trafford tour, got my jersey. So I had my football fix over there for sure.
Doing it all over our summer, and I guess you had to experience a Europe winter, which is both unfortunate and a great experience, I guess. It's something you got to do.
Well, that's when they have football over there, right? So
that's fair.
I
that
was
is
happy.
fair that is definitely fair. I do mention that comment that Matt made. None of you listening at home would actually know about it, because unfortunately this is the first time we're back for 2025. It's not our first attempt at recording a podcast for 2025, unfortunately. Not just us, but the entirety of Front Page Football had some technical issues a couple of weeks ago when we did last record. That episode is sitting there in my laptop somewhere. Maybe we'll release it one day just to have a laugh and reminisce on, I guess, what was a random Christmas period. I don't know if it's going to actually mean anything in the long run, but either way, it was there. I do apologize that nothing was able to come out until now. It has been a bit of an extended break. So technically, you just haven't heard our voices since our Christmas special, which I do hope you enjoy, because as I said at the time, that was a lot of fun to record. But to start us off, because we haven't really covered then to use, what has happened over the Christmas break? And me and Matt had some thoughts and some opinions and some things that we wanted to highlight, but unfortunately, you're not going to hear Matt's opinions. You're going to hear, well, not unfortunately for this part, you're going to hear Annabelle's instead. So the things that we touched on, Annabelle, and this is good because I haven't actually had the chance to talk about this with you, so I'm getting fresh opinions, still at least. Biggest headline over the Christmas period, Robbie Hooker leaving the Wanderers. They're rooted in last place. They were rooted in last place when he left. Kind of all came about as a surprise. The club came and said that he was going to be taking in, well, a bit of absence for their trip down to Melbourne. Jeff Abrahams took over that match, 4-4 that match finish, which we'll touch on in a sec, actually, because that was wild in itself. After that game, it comes out that, due to personal reasons, Robbie Hooker's leaving his role. Took me by surprise. If personal reasons is the issue, I wish him all the best. But what's your take on all that? Because it's something that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I find it a bit strange. It clearly wasn't the club's decision, which is good that they're not sacking people mid-season. But I'm not really sure. Of course, if it's personal reasons, keep that private. You know, it's not really for us to know. But the Wanderers weren't going particularly well, still at the bottom of the table. But they often don't go particularly well, if we're being honest about the Wanderers. I mean, when a team's not going well and their coach steps away, immediately your kind of mind goes to, you know, is it really personal reasons, or is there, you know, did he not want to be around anymore? Could he not figure out a way, you know, to get them out of the hole? although my gut does say it really is personal reasons, and I, you know, wish Robbie Hooker all the best with whatever's going on. But of course, you know, your brain goes there when it's a team not performing well.
Can't remember if I said this on an episode that you were on, or if it was one that I said last week and no one's actually heard this comment yet anyway, but I remember when Front Page Dub first started, it was, I think, halfway through the 2022-2023 season, which was just after the World Cup finished in 2022. And Matt, well, in particular, was notorious for just ripping into the Wanderers women's team, not just the team, but like the program as a whole, and like really put a lot of pressure on the club because, from his point of view, they just did not give a shit about their women's team in a way. And then it came probably around halfway through last season. To the start of the year, I think it took some time to warm up. But once I started doing interviews with Robbie Hooker as well, and once you started seeing what they were kind of building, the football they were trying to play in, then they started picking up results from it as well. Suddenly, our tune was changing, and me and Matt were both on this page going into this season. I'm not sure if you were too, Annabelle. But it looked like Wanderers are finally going to be able to get a bit of consistency under their belt. They had a coach that was there last year. They had a full preseason under that said coach, leading him into the season this year. I think the biggest argument against everything that they were doing was the fact that they were probably playing a style of play that was above the level of talent that they have in their squad. Unfortunately, they probably just weren't at the level that they needed to be to play the style of football that Hooker was trying to implement. But, and this is something I definitely said in the last episode and haven't actually had the chance to say publicly yet, but here's the last game that he coached. That was the 1-1 draw against Perth Glory, where Wanderers conceded that penalty. I think it was like the 95th or 96th minute. It was ridiculously late. And Hooker's usually the type. He's not necessarily the most social person, but he'll hang around. He'll talk with his staff, or he'll sit on the bench while the girls are signing autographs or anything like that. He's not one to disappear. But on this night, he did. I went to try and get an interview with him, as I do for enter the show and chuck it in, or put it on the podcast somewhere. But I went looking for him and I couldn't find him, which was unlike him. And I didn't think much of it at the time. I just thought, okay, yeah, he's pissed off about the results, probably going to the training room early. And then everything started coming out. Okay, he's not going down to Melbourne for personal reasons. Oh, he's left due to personal reasons. Then you start thinking, okay, yeah, something actually happened here. I don't want to say he's cracked under pressure. Maybe there's something going on in his personal life and the football's taken an effect of it, or maybe it was that he was struggling with the demands of the job. It's hard to say. There's a lot of theories that you can put to it. But seeing how that all played out in his last game, I don't want to say it foreshadowed anything because I didn't pick it up at the time. But it's interesting seeing that and now thinking back on it, considering everything that's happened since. So to Robbie Hooker, I do wish you all the best. You were a fun person to interview, and we'll miss the push-ups on the sidelines, because that was always a fun watch. Something else happened in the Christmas break while we were on a lull. Brisbane Roar. They've had a bit of a slump since this period, but back-to-back wins that were 6-1 and 8-2. Lani Fryer, I know she scored a hat-trick in at least one of them. But Brisbane Roar, at one stage, they were looking like one of the genuine attacking forces that we've seen in A-League women's history. You've had Sian Fryer, who was in Matilda, Tamika Yallop kind of sitting in behind him. Lani Fryer, who's now going to be Matilda, we're going to touch on that a little bit later. And I don't know if she was playing in this game, but it's probably something that's more come out in recent weeks. But Grace Kualamu, who's been absolutely fantastic, probably one of the best young strikers I've seen in the A-League women's in, well, I guess, recent years, had a strong start last season. Did her ACL after, I think it was 2-3 games, unfortunately. Come back and kind of picked up where she's left off. She's been absolutely brilliant. But I'm not sure. These two games happened while you were overseas, unfortunately, Annabelle, so I'm not sure how much you can speak to them. But did you actually get the chance to, like, at least skim results while you were in Europe? And did you end up seeing these? And what was your reaction to it?
Yeah, those two were ones I actually remembered quite well. I was skimming results briefly, but Lani Fryer saw almost coming out of nowhere in the scheme of things. And I think it was back-to-back hat tricks, if I remember correctly, which was just phenomenal. And of course, you know, she's Sean's twin and all of that going on with it. Just the way that Brisbane were able to really become an incredible attacking threat. Tamika Yallop has wound back the clock and is playing some really incredible football at the minute. And with the Fryer sisters dominating, I think Sean has provided all the assists for Lani or something like that in one of the games. it was just looking really exciting, which yeah is great for the league. It's disappointing that Sean has now, you know, needing surgery on a hip, I think it was, or
I did,
something.
I think it was ankle. I did say that
ankle.
Recently. She posted
something,
it as
my,
well. So that's that's
yeah. So that's no good, especially after just getting the move to Wolfsburg, which is massive for her going to play Champions League football. Because a lot of the girls, even in England, playing at that standard, they're not also playing Champions League. So great news for her. But you know, speaking on the topic from a Brisbane point of view, it's good signs, and I think it's the kind of performances that they can bring back potentially. Like, you just need an early goal here and there, and maybe the floodgates open for Brisbane in a game in the future. So good signs for Brisbane over the break for sure.
Touched on it before. I probably won't go into it too much detail because we've kind of spoken about everything around it. But Victory Wanderers as well had that crazy 4-all draw where Wanderers scored two very late goals. And Sydney FC, who we're going to touch on later, Thunder delay in their win over Canberra, which ended up not being replayed. I actually asked this question to Matt on the last episode. I really wish I could have published what his answer was, because he did go into a detail a little bit. But Annabelle, you are a Sydney FC fan, so it's probably a good question for you, because there's obviously all the classic questions of Sydney bias in this, not even just in the A-League Women's, just in general in football in this country. Sydney FC are winning a game at the 55-minute mark. They're up 2-0. Lightning hits pretty bad. They clear the field. They decide, we're not going to replay the game. Sydney's just going to get a 2-0 win. Flip the script. Canberra up 2-0. Do they still make the same decision, or do they replay the game?
I am not sure, because the reason I say that is, in theory, it's an A-League decision, isn't it? But it's influenced by the clubs for sure. And Canberra is notoriously in a poor financial position. Just, I'm not sure they want to play extra games necessarily. I'm not sure if they can fund extra games and extra fields and things. That could have played a reason. Speaking on hypotheticals here, I think Sydney FC do, you know, get bias. I think they have really good influence. I think surely their success has kind of just built a bit of a culture around, oh yeah, Sydney FC get whatever they want. But in reality, I just don't know. I don't know the politics behind it all behind closed doors. Probably not, to be honest. I think it doesn't get replayed in both instances, unless if it's a Canberra home game, maybe it's, I just don't know.
It's a tough one. It's interesting because, look, with Sydney FC, I know there's all that bias and all of that, but I think there's just a genuine logistic thing here where you're going to make Canberra drive from Canberra back to Sydney for, what, 35 minutes of football? It's not worth it. Wouldn't be worth it either way. And especially if Canberra were winning, it definitely wouldn't be worth it.
Yeah.
And the way Matt actually
if
explained
Canberra were, if Canberra, if the game was played in Canberra and Sydney were losing, maybe it gets replayed because they have a bit more resources to get people down there. But I think for Canberra, like, they're scraping by financially, relying on, you know, government to prop them up. You know, they're just surviving as a football club, and having to replay a game is pretty tough on them potentially. Yeah.
Yeah, no, the way Matt kind of explained it as well, the way Australian football as a whole is going at the moment, they're trying to push for a Canberra A-League licence. If anything, they'd want Canberra to win that match. So if the roles are reversed, they definitely try and give Canberra the result. That's obviously a hypothetical as well. I can't say that that's actually something they do, but in reality, it's probably in the APL's best interest to give Canberra as much good publicity as possible. So denying them the chance to get back into a match probably goes against that a little bit. But we'll move on to actual new content instead of just trying to divulge on an episode that never aired. Melbourne City. Now, this is something that I've kind of picked up over the last couple of weeks because it's flown under the radar. I haven't actually heard many people kind of address it and talk about it, and maybe it's just because I've missed it when people are having this conversation. Unfortunately, there's been a few episodes of Dubzone that I've missed. So if Dubzone's touched on this, I do apologise, but we're 14 games into the season. We're just past halfway mark, probably about the 3/5 mark. Melbourne City is still undefeated. 8 wins, 6 draws, no losses. They've gone invincible twice before. One was in a 12-game season where they actually went and won all 12 games. You can, I don't want to say you can question the legitimacy of it, but they were definitely helped by the fact that they essentially just built a super team for their entry into the league. The next time they did it was still 12 game season, 11 wins, one draw. A few years later, but still in that period where Melbourne City were just going, okay, you're a Matilda, we're going to bring you into this squad and we're just going to build the best team in the league by a landslide. Which is fair enough. They had the resources to do it. They went and did it. That's fair enough. We're in a position now where Melbourne City aren't exactly by far and away the best team in the league. I still had them tipped to come first, but there was competition there. I thought Sydney would be pressing on them as much as they could. I thought Western United would have something to say. Melbourne Victory, I'm pleasantly surprised that they've actually been able to push into the kind of top two. There was a core, there was probably the bare bones of a good squad, but they've really been able to gel together well and play some good football. But the way Melbourne City are going, like they haven't, it's probably gone under the radar a little bit because they haven't set the league on fire. There hasn't been, especially in the last few weeks, anything that's gone, wow, look at this Melbourne City performance. In the last five games, they've actually drawn three. So you can start seeing maybe a few cracks slowly showing. But the fact of the matter is, we're less than 10 games out from the end of the season. They haven't lost yet. So my question to you, Annabelle, how realistic are the invincible chances for Melbourne City?
I think it's quite realistic just because they're surviving in games and, you know, they've had a lot of draws, but you can draw plenty of games and still go undefeated. That's sort of the way it works. So I think I think looking at who they've got coming up, there's some easier games from a Melbourne City point of view. As we mentioned, you know, they play Newcastle twice, who are towards the bottom end of the ladder right now. I also think they've got great squad depth. So even though they've got some players, you know, potentially going out on Matildas and even young Matildas duty for some of them, they've got a lot of really quality players in that squad. And a lot of teams would be so jealous of the bench even that Melbourne City are putting out each week, because there are some bench players who are guaranteed starters in other teams, I think. And as you said, they put resources towards their women's team, which I've always, you know, admired about clubs that do that. And that just pays off at the end of the day. I think the talent across the squad is really strong. And even though they're not playing up to maybe their potential, you know, dropping points here and dropping points there, there's 9 games to go. So it's tough that they probably lose one eventually. So I don't think they do. I don't know. I say they don't, because 9 games to continue on this streak is tough. If they do, it's with plenty of draws. But, you know, I think it'd be cool to see it happen.
I just realised they play tomorrow night. We're recording this on Tuesday, by the way. This episode is probably going to come out on Thursday. If they have lost to Western United by the time this episode comes out, I really do apologise. We've probably shot ourselves in the foot talking about it now a little bit, but you know what?
You watch. They're going to lose now because we've talked about it. We are going to curse them. They'd probably lose 1 in 9. If it's tomorrow night, guys, I called it. I'll take it.
This is a massive risk that we're taking, and I only just really put this together now. But you know what? What's life without a little bit of risk? If they do lose last night, thank you, Melbourne City Women's, for making 10, 15 minutes of this podcast completely irrelevant. I'm liking the look of it. The reality is they haven't made that many like wow signings over the offseason. Like, you had Spec Meyer come in, who, you know, she had a decent season at Wellington the season before. She's come into Melbourne City, taking a game to another level. Alexia Apostolakis, young Matilda, good player at the Wanderers, gone to City, taking a game to another level. It's the sort of thing that we've actually seen their men's team do for a long period, where, you know, they started grabbing youth players from basically around the country. Had Arzani come in from Sydney, Michael Tilio come in from Sydney FC's academy as well. And they come, they give them a platform, they develop them, and then they are able to showcase that they're, you know, A-League standard or top A-League standard as well, as much as, you know, Michael Tilio probably wasn't a starter before he was getting those moves to Europe. That's because they had a star-starter squad as well. Whereas Melbourne City, their first entrance into the A-League was, we're here, we're going to be the best team in the competition. And their, I guess, idea was, we're just going to sign every Matilda that's open to playing in the A-League Women's and just build basically a super team. You had essentially, what was it, the Matilda squad plus the best visa signings in the league. Like, it was untenable. You couldn't beat it. Now we're in a period where they're actually looking to be probably a little bit sustainable. They're going, okay, we're the best young players in the league, even if it's not necessarily coming through Melbourne City or a Victorian academy. But they're still looking to find players at an age where we just need to give them a platform to perform. They're giving them that platform to perform, and then they're going on and they're actually that. Now it's just a matter of finding, okay, who do we replace the next person with? They probably haven't gotten into a system yet where it's okay, once this player goes, we've already got the person that's going to fill their boots. They're probably still going, okay, who can we nab? Who can we fill this hole with? You can look at someone like Daniela Galic, best youngster in the league last season. She leaves. Who do we fill this gap? We'll bring in Mariana Speckmeyer. Alexia Postolakis. I can't remember who she would have replaced actually off the top of my head. But the point is, they're looking at players that are top quality players that just need the chance to come into a league leading side, getting those players and in that turning into a very, very good football team. We had the conversation at the start of the season where playing in the Women's Champions League and having that period, one, actually playing competitive football before the A-League season starts, and two, being in a camp together and actually having the chance to train with each other, live with each other, and actually have the chance to bond as a team, probably had an impact on their side as well. Funnily enough, I think the reason why they're playing that game tomorrow night is because one of the weekends that's coming up in March, they do play their quarterfinal in the Asian Women's Champions League against Taichung Blue Whale from Chinese Taipei. That is a football club's name if I have ever heard one. But it's an interesting way this season's going to play out for them, because you've got a good side there, and I'm definitely not denying that. We're starting to see in the last few weeks where I don't want to say they've been figured out, but the results are starting to worsen. Their game against Melbourne Victory on the weekend, Melbourne Derby, it wasn't until the 89th minute where they could find an equaliser and hold on to that undefeated streak. But it probably comes from the fact that they've got a very young squad as well. The reality is you've got players in there that's still kind of in the young Matildas, are only just starting to transition to Matildas. Briley Henry, another one that you were talking about at the start of the season, still pretty much in the early stages of her career. Holly McNamara as well, who's just actually earned her first Matildas call-up since her injury. We'll get into that a little bit later. There's clear differences between this side and the sides that have gone undefeated in the past. But the fact that, and it probably speaks to Marco Mastrianci, I've butchered that name, I do apologise to him. But the football that he's playing, the side that he's built, as much as it's not a star-studded squad, he's got all the ingredients together and he's turning it into something quite special. So like, maybe speak to that a little bit as well.
At the same time, though, Cody, it's not as much of a star-studded team, but it's also not as much of a star-studded league as it used to be. You used to have every single Matilda almost play in this, in the A-League every summer. And now
Most of
they're
them are
not
Melbourne
doing
City
that.
too.
A lot at Melbourne City, quite a few at Sydney FC, that every now and again they'd spread themselves out. Sam would always go to Perth. But, now it's incredible that they've all got full-time contracts, at big clubs around the world. It means there's less stars in the A-League, which means there's less, need to sign all the amazing or that level of star power, I guess, onto one team. You're not going up against as many stars each week. So it's a different style of A-League than perhaps we've seen in the past, which means, yes, a team that doesn't have all the big names perhaps can do this. As I said, they've built their squad really nicely. They've covered, they don't have that many deficiencies. They've got a strong back line. They've got an exciting midfield that can, bridge the gap towards their front three, who are all, exciting players. Holly McNamara, Speckmeyer, Bosch, with Polisena in behind. Like, that's a good core group. I think it's different to Melbourne cities we've seen in the past, but so's the A-League.
And it's funny as well, because you look at Melbourne City side as well, on the other side of Melbourne, they've probably got a side that, if you look at it on paper, probably represents what the A-League used to be like. You got Emily Gilning up front, Alex Chidiak in the middle, the centre-back partnership of Claudia Bunge, New Zealand international, Kayla Morrison, someone who a lot of people are calling 2B, Matilda, Alana Murphy in the middle as well. Nikki Flannery, Rachel Lowe. Like, you're talking some big names. Like, they're probably the star-studded side that people are expecting, or people that maybe that people are used to. But the way Melbourne City's kind of come together, building up, they've got the training facilities as well. I don't think we should underestimate that. Like, they've got a very, very good and very professional setup in themselves. And you look at their bench as well. You've got Shelby McMahon, one of the best youngsters coming through right now. Carly Ross back, and you've got attacking options of Rana Polisina, Catherine Harvey, Lords Bosch, Speck Meyer, McNamara. Two to three of those are going to be left out each week. Like, that's nuts. You've got the side there. I'm really intrigued to see how they go. And I do apologize to everyone if they end up losing by the time this podcast comes out. But the reality is, whether they go undefeated this season or not, what they've been able to do and what they've been able to build, I think, is actually quite good. The funny thing with all this, we're talking about them going undefeated this season, they're still well within the title race. Like, they're not blowing the league. Like, as much as things have been good for them, and as much as maybe we're talking about the talent diluting, there's still competitiveness there, because you've got a side that we're talking about that's got so many things going right for them there, and they're doing the right things as well. They're getting the points. They're not losing games. But you've still got Melbourne Victory hot in their tails. You've got Adelaide United not too far away from them as well. We're going to take a break soon as well, because me and Matt do have a chat about Adelaide United that we do want you to hear. But the fact that they...
You know what's funny, Cody? What if Melbourne City did go undefeated, yet didn't win the league? Like, that's a possibility if they have enough draws. How funny would that be?
I've been waiting for that to happen. I was hoping Juventus would actually go undefeated in Serie A this season, because I just wanted to see it happen. They were drawing games like it was going out of fashion. Melbourne City are at least winning enough that they're still keeping themselves ahead. But it's actually not impossible to think about, because Melbourne Victory are doing well themselves. They've had a couple of shaky moments. There was a few games at the start of the season where you're thinking, oh, okay, they're just going to be a bit, hey, go on, maybe high mid-table. But they've started to grow each week. Alani Olszewski's been an absolutely fantastic signing. And they're really putting themselves in good stead. It's going to be an interesting title race. And if Melbourne City go the season undefeated, you'd like to think that's going to be enough to push them over the edge and actually win the Premiership. But I wouldn't count on Melbourne Victory, because they're a side that, you know, maybe they're going to lose a few games here or there, but when they win well. So I'm really excited to see how this plays out. Two of the, I think there's two best defences in the competition too, which is, oh no, Mariners are in there as well. Well, the second and third best defences in the competition. So they've got things going for them as well. Up there with the goals, unfortunately, Brisbane Roar's blown everyone out of the park in that respect. But it's an interesting title race, see how that's all going to play out. We're going to take a quick break from that. On the last episode, me and Matt did have a conversation about Adelaide United. It's still actually relevant, so just to make sure that whole podcast doesn't go to waste, we are going to play it for you now. So here is mine and Matt's chat about Adelaide United. Now we are going to move into, I guess, our deep dive for the episode, and that will be on, as we kind of alluded to before, Adelaide United. Now, I'm in two minds about this team. The reason why, the last five or seven games that they've played, they've been quite good. They've actually been maybe consistent. That's probably a better word. Last five games, sorry. They've had the 1-0 against Wanderers, the 1-0 against the Mariners, 3-3 with Newcastle Jets, which that result's probably a bit dubious in itself. The 2-1 win over Wellington Phoenix, and then the 3-2 win over Brisbane Roar, which is probably the biggest highlight of the lot. Now, with that, you can look at it and go, they're five games undefeated. That's a good sign. They've worked their way into third. Things look pretty good. They've also had some narrow wins against sides that maybe shouldn't be in competition with them. They're, you know, talking about sides like Mariners, Wanderers, who are a little bit on the lower end of the table. Maybe not Mariners, because they are still in touching distance of finals, but, you know, look at the Wanderers game, a 1-0 win at home against them. You'd probably think a little bit better from Adelaide in that circumstance. But the biggest thing that you do need in this competition, I guess, is consistency, and that's something that Adelaide do have under their belt at the moment. They've got, what do you call, Fiona Wirtz and Chelsea Dorba leading the line very well.
Mm.
They've got a well-rounded side. They're not conceding a large amount of goals. Maybe the last few weeks has seen that average go up a little bit. But I'm in two minds about them, because on one hand, they're consistent. They're doing things right. They're doing what they need to do. But on the other hand, besides the Brisbane Roar game, probably haven't seen that extra oomph from them, or an extra X factor that you need to, I guess, take a competition by the hand. But Matt, what's your assessment so far?
Yeah, look, I apologize for foreshadowing it so much really at the start of the show. Well, foreshadowing wouldn't be the right word because I was just blatantly saying what it was.
It's in the thumbnail, it's in the title.
True. I always forget how these mediums work.
You guys knew what we were talking about.
No. Look, I just think that the thing that I'm rearing to talk about with Adelaide is actually the fact that their draw, and certainly their draw in the period where they've been winning a fair dollop recently, it's actually been really quite on the fortunate side. In the last like month and a half, I know for a fact they've played the Jets twice. You know, they've played these sides like Wellington and these kind of mid to lower table sides, the Mariners is another, where, you know, not only is it kind of fortunate that you don't play any really intense opponent really until, you know, they had already kind of had a bit of good form as well. But they're also in a position where, like, if you look at the games that they were winning, they all had this real tight edge to them. And again, I think it just comes back to the unpredictability of the league, the fact that, you know, certain individuals probably just have that bit of X factor with them. Some of them are just a bit of an unknown quantity, and then just the certain things that can naturally make a team strong in the A-League environment. I've already, you know, said it five or six times tonight, but it really is just at the crux of why a team like Adelaide, a team like Brisbane are succeeding in the way that they have been throughout the season. And, you know, I think when you look at the narrow nature of those results in particular, you really ought to look at the way they can go against them as well. Because I think their result when they came to Perth, game that I watched quite intimately, I mean, Adrian Stenter was one that he actually looked at it and really, you know, he wasn't panicked about it. He wasn't worried about the fact that, you know, they really had a lot of areas where they should have taken a lot more from that game than what they realistically did. And then you look at the kind of more clinical nature in a lot of their closer results that they've had. And I think you see a team that is ultimately probably more on the fortunate side to be where it is as well, all things considered. So, you know, to have this idea that they're gunning for a grand final, I think would be a false way to put it. But let's actually give them credit where it's due, because another thing that I think Adelaide's program has done really well is, let's not forget, one of the biggest things to come out of this preseason for Adrian Stenter was the fact that it was the first of a time they did preseason. It was the first time that they actually went out and did the tour to rural Victoria, played those promotional games alongside Western, and I'm sure there were some other sides. Was Brisbane one of them as well, which is quite interesting.
I think so. I know there were the three A-League men's sides.
Okay. But anyway, to more to the point, they just had stability. And I think, again, to talk about natural themes of what makes success in the A-League, one of the biggest things for me that I kind of reflect on now when you look at the men's competition is, look at the fact that Adelaide and Western have been so successful in those leagues, and look at the fact that their leadership has been insanely stable, and the one or two veteran players who have given them their identity has had a lot of stability within it as well. Look at someone like Orion Kiddo, who's always been around the scene for Adelaide and is now the captain, you know. And I just think that when you look at the women's team, maybe actually in terms of the recruitment, there was a fair bit that was done. But certainly in preseason, it was nothing that we looked at and went, you know, it's super, super exciting. I think, am I right in saying that we had them in the realms of kind of 7th to 9th? I don't think we had them in the 6th. So
I had them in the 6th.
Okay.
But I was looking at it from the sense of, you know, you bring him back. We had Dorba, Warts, Sasaki, yep. Condon. Like, I think I said it to you on the first episode, it's real get the band back together vibes. As much as some of them were, it was a side that was built maybe over the last whole rebuild.
Yep.
Over the last 12 months. But there was a... Oh, and Matilda McNamara coming back as well, sorry.
Yes.
There was a sense that they were, you know, trying to recreate what they were able to do a few years ago, where they were able to finish in the top four. You know, you bring that consistency back a little bit, and I guess that's maybe the reason why they're in the position they are now. I think it depends what you value in this competition. You mentioned one of the biggest things that calls for success in the A-League women's is just being consistent. And you can't argue that Adelaide right now are in that period where they are able to at least consistently pick up points. They've got 13 out of a possible 15 in their last five games. That's a great return. I think they'd be near the top of the form table with that. But do you value that, or do you value, you know, the teams going above and beyond and being exciting and having a statement win per se? Because I don't know if we've necessarily gotten that from this Adelaide side. And I guess that's my only concern. And you look at the period that they've been consistent in, I guess the only team that's maybe above and beyond that they've had to face is Brisbane Roar as well. So they've been, you can look at it from the perspective that they've maybe been a bit fortunate in this period as well. You know, you look at their next two games, West United, Sydney FC away as well. And Sydney FC, you know, maybe they're turning a corner. But their last five games as well, Melbourne City away, Brisbane Roar, victory in Melbourne, Western United in Melbourne, then Sydney FC on the last day of the season where, you know, you're talking about a Sydney side that might actually be fighting not just for a title, which we expect them to be, but fighting just to make finals. You know, there's a lot of riding on the back end of that season, on the back end of that, back end of their season.
Yeah.
I guess if you can look at it from the perspective that they're picking up the points they need to pick up, the reality is right now they're in a half decent position. You know, they've got, what's the exact number? A five point cushion on finals. It's not something that can be lost quite easily, especially when you've got three places underneath you as well. But I guess does the fact that maybe they haven't had a major win or a big win concern you, or is that something that...
Yeah, especially when I think, to the point about stability and kind of getting the band back together, you know, Dorba, Wirtz, that's kind of more of an attacking core that should actually, you know, be dependable. And actually, when you're playing less fortunate sides or sides that are in you know, have had a lot of instability, that ultimately that's where they actually really should be looking slightly more dependable than what they are. And this is the reason why I think with Brisbane, you could probably say you're more comfortable in their ability to you know, be there in more kind of back end of the season kind of areas, with the potential to take a game on, score more freely. And I still see a bit of that kind of stagnant side of Adelaide that I certainly became well acquainted to when they came to Perth, which is a result that kind of does stand out a little bit more than what we've seen in recent weeks. But the clinical nature of these results, whilst it can be positive, you need to kind of find that second gear to be able to push yourselves to another level. And it actually seems to me that if they were any better, I feel like they would have come closer to finding it. And ultimately, in the times where Brisbane have been able to score, you know, 6-8 goals, I don't think Adelaide have packed that punch yet. And that's something that also kind of weighs on the mind with, you know, where is the success bred from actually being a really, really quality side, or is it bred from other factors that we know the A-League can kind of, you know, produce from time to time? And that's, again, more of where the natural kind of take a step back and view the whole picture narrative really encapsulates you at a time like this in the competition. I also think we ought to keep in mind that, you know, we're actually probably a little bit closer to reaching the end of the season, but by no means are we kind of right on the verge of it, which also plays a factor in the ebbs and flows that'll come and go. And before we know it, we could be talking about, oh my God, you know, the Phoenix of fourth or something like that. So these things change. They're pretty fluid in this day and age, and Adelaide have got a lot to be aware of. The fight is never over.
Well, to be fair, Wellington were fourth at one stage, actually. That actually has happened this season. They're probably a story in itself, maybe just lacking that little bit of consistency. But when you look at it from that perspective, I guess, you know, Wellington and Brisbane have probably been the two teams that have maybe grabbed more headlines and attention than what Adelaide have, because when they are on, they're brilliant, they're exciting, and they have these statement wins, and they can put three or four past the team just in one game. But with Adelaide, you know, they're not probably going to knock your socks off or anything like that with a sole performance. But at least week by week, they're getting the results they need. So, like I said, it comes back to, I guess, what you value out of a football team, out of a football club. But, you know, we could sit here and talk about Wellington all day and go, oh, look, they had this, that win against Wanderers, a 3-0 win, and, you know, Alyssa Wynnum kind of sparked her attention because of the way she celebrates, and it's absolutely fantastic, don't get me wrong. And then you have the come-from-behind win against Newcastle Jets, you know, one that really gets Porirua Park excited and reeled in. Yeah. And then there's the win against Sydney FC, which, you know, it's a statement in itself, even if Sydney FC aren't doing the best this season. You know, you can point to moments where, you know, they really reeled you in and brought into a storyline. And then you've got Brisbane Roar. They've had, you know, we've mentioned at the start of the episode, 6-1, 8-2, back-to-back. Exciting players. The Fryer sisters absolutely balling out. One now about to go to Wolfsburg in Germany. You know, every game they play, they're exciting. And when they're doing well, they're winning by 3-4 goals and sometimes even more. But then you have the flip side where, you know, when maybe things aren't going too well, they do drop points and they'll lose games. Whereas Adelaide, you know, as much as maybe some performances haven't been great, they're still finding a way to see it out. So that's, you know, that there in itself is probably an important factor too, because the reality is, you know, good teams get points and win games even if you're not at your best. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I think this is the rest of the season for Adelaide goes one of two ways. Either the next couple of weeks, the West United, Sydney FC, one of those games, actually turn around and, you know, put 3-4 past them and go, this is the team we want to make. This is the team that we are. Or you see in the next few weeks, their season actually starts to peter out a little bit. I think it goes one of two ways. I don't think this the period that they're in something that can last forever. I don't think they're going to go and win the next 5 or 10 games by a goal simply like that and actually be able to stay consistent in that manner. Either they drew a big win or they drew a few losses in a row. There's no in between, in my opinion. And
to that point, I think Western is one of the most intriguing teams you can come up against in the mould of either the Mariners, Western, Brisbane and the Phoenix, for the simple fact that they actually have embodied a lot of inconsistency. And if you're looking to really either establish yourself or be in a period where you think you know you're going to fade away, facing an inconsistent team that's either going to bring their best and thrash you, or, you know, start a little bit shaky and you're going to have that chance to pile the goals on. I think it makes a very, very intriguing contest. I know that Wellington and Brisbane have really not drawn a lot of games. I'm actually keen to see, I'll just bring the table up. Have Western drawn a lot?
They've drawn 3 this season.
I mean, okay, it's actually, well, it's more than obviously Adelaide themselves, Canberra, Brisbane and Wellington. So, but, you know, 3 drawn games out of 12 is still obviously not a super high hit rate, which actually that whole midfield pack from 3rd to 7th, there's probably a lot to be said for their inconsistency upon review. And it's probably why we've spoken very pertinently about two of those teams who are at the very top of that in 3rd and 4th, where they've actually been, they've been very good. But I think they've also been found out a bit. And I don't think that doesn't really strike me as a super massive coincidence. If anything, it actually tells me that someone like Western is just a few tweaks away from being in that very same position. And again, you know, we were just talking about the Phoenix. Oh, well, maybe one day they're in 4th. I mean, I've not even really realised that if Brisbane continue to lose and the Phoenix, you know, take a leap over them, not only will they be in 4th, but they will very much be within earshot of just about 2nd place. This is obviously just the nature of the competition. So I come back to that conversation again. I think it speaks volumes with where we're at in the current state of affairs, because all of these teams have individual talent. But I don't know about you, Cody, and I don't mean to derail the conversation, but does this not just really prove the value of that top 6 system as well? Like, for me, I'm looking at this and you're just licking your lips at every opportunity. Yes, there is a serious problem with the fact that I think the Mariners and Sydney are 7 points behind. So in that sense, it's only an 8-team league with 6 teams that'll have something to play for. But it's that gaggle in the middle where anything and everything can happen and teams can look like a contender out of nowhere.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. We're going to have probably a bit more of a negative conversation now. As Matt Olson did title an article in the early days of 2022, it's time to talk about Sydney FC. Annabelle, you famously said at the start of the season that the way things are going for Sydney FC, maybe questions need to start being asked of Ante Juric. And me and Matt gave you a lot of shit. We are 12...
You asked me to eat those words. I'm bringing them back up, Cody. I think I was onto something.
We are 12 weeks post that happening. I'm going to ask you for next week's lottery numbers because, honestly, I think you seem to have a way of knowing what's going to happen. Maybe it's just a football thing. Maybe you can't give me a lottery numbers and make me a millionaire, unfortunately. But Sydney FC, look, you followed Sydney FC a fair bit throughout your life. You understand what's kind of expected of them, especially in their women's program. You've seen the success. You've seen the standards that are set in that club. Just to put it basic, what's gone wrong this year?
I think there's a few issues. I think Sydney FC has always been a team that has had kind of, yes, there's always been young talent and exciting players, but there's also been, you know, a superstar or two, a core kind of squad of more senior, more established players that perhaps isn't around right now, you know. Courtney Vine left. They didn't really replace her with someone of the same pedigree, and maybe that's coming back to hurt them. I think individually, a lot of the players are not performing up to their standards, which is a shame. The midfield, I've been saying since the beginning of the season that they just look not good enough. Unfortunately, they're just not clicking very well. It's maybe a bit too young. I think we chatted off air about Hawksby not really playing to how she's, you know, previously been a standout player in the league, and she's not at that standard at all at the minute. And I also think there are, for me, a key deficiency is up front. They're not scoring many goals. The strike position is one that leaves me scratching my head a bit because, you know, they've sort of got three strikers in the squad. They've got Farrow, Connors, and Luchtmeier. And Luchtmeier is a player I really rate, but she's young, and so she, you know, isn't ready to be the starter. And but you look at two ahead of her, and Connors is a player who isn't consistent enough, particularly at you know, getting shots on target. I'd say 90% of her shots are off target almost. That I might not be correct with the stats there, but it feels like watching her that she should be getting more between the posts. And Farrow, I'm not sure. She scored recently, I know that, but, you know, she's not scoring enough, right? So I don't know if she's up to the task. And I just look at their whole squad and it's not very balanced. They're not very exciting. It's disappointing. And yes, I still think perhaps I spoke too soon about Ante. I think we should at least give him the season, let him hang around till next year. He's done plenty of good things for the club, but, you know, they really don't look good this year. And they're not, even in games they're winning sometimes, the style of play is off, including they're not looking in it. And it's disappointing for a club that does pride itself on its historic success. So, and its ability to produce young players and turn them into dollars, you know, we pick up player like Courtney Vine out of Sydney Uni, turn her into the Matilda and, you know, an incredible player she is today. There are players with that kind of talent in the squad right now, but I struggle to see Sydney FC helping them get to that level, at least this year. You know, we're not turning anyone into the next, you know, Matilda in the team, which is disappointing for a club that has developed young talent over the last, you know, decade.
It's an interesting one because they've probably taken the approach where, and they've done it in the past, they look for good players around the league. So similar to what Melbourne City do, but maybe in a bit more of a daring way. City do look for a certain profile. They look for at least someone's going to fit within the side. And they look for a certain age as well, where they're looking for that young talent they can bring in, maybe at a lower club. Whereas Sydney, they're genuine. They have a knack for genuinely going for other side stars. As a statement almost, say, like, we're here, we're the number one side, like, people want to play for us. You look at the season before this one, they brought in Fiona Wartz of Wurtz and Shay Connors, you know, Brisbane's star striker, Adelaide's star striker from the year before. I think she even got Golden Boot. Like, she was Julie Dolan medal at the very least. almost as if to say, like, if you want to be the best player in the league, come play for us. We'll put you on that platform. And I think they've tried to do a similar thing with Millie Farrow. The only thing is, and I said it during last season as well, I don't think she's the goal scorer that people necessarily think that she is. She had that game against Melbourne City where she scored a hat-trick. They won, I think it was 3-0, 3-2, something like that. Can't remember off the top of my head. But before that game, she was basically a back-to-goal, contribute to Perth going forward. Can be a focal point, but not necessarily taking the brunt of actually trying to be the main goal scorer. And she was playing well in that period as well. She scored that hat-trick, and you know, Matt being our Perth correspondent, he was the one that picked it up better than anyone. But he was saying after that, it ended up being a thing of, okay, we've got this person up front that can score goals. Let's just do everything that we can to try and get the ball to her. And they ended up falling apart because of it, because she's not necessarily a natural goal scorer. Yeah, she scored the weekend. It was a nice goal that she scored against Adelaide too on Friday, sorry. But that's not necessarily her game. And the reality is Sydney FC don't need a striker like that. They need a focal point. They need someone. The best person I can kind of point to that they can look at is Madison Haley, who was there not last season, the one before. And she played fantastic. Someone who could play a bunch of different roles, but also you put her in the box, you give her the ball, 9 times out of 10, she's going to score. Natural goal scorer. You've got plenty of people around her that can create. That's who Sydney FC need. If I'm looking at them next year, actually, I'm probably taking a punt on them, and it plays into what Sydney FC kind of do. I'd be looking at someone like Grace Kualamu, the way she's playing as well. I think that's someone that, you know, could probably come in and actually do a job for them. But you've got that issue where they probably haven't found the right profile of player they need to address that attacking issue, because even last season they struggled a little bit in front of goal. You've got Courtney Vine that's left aside, and you haven't really brought in someone to replace her. I think Indiana Dos Santos has covered that gap, but you're talking about a different profile of player as well, and also a 16-year-old who, as great as she is, fantastic player, probably isn't at that level yet. Then again, she's probably only half a season away from being at that level, because she's probably been Sydney FC's best player this season, if I'm not wrong. I think the midfield imbalance is slowly starting to rectify itself. If I'm looking at this side's issues overall, we can point to Ante Juric, and it's a bit of fun just because of what you said at the start of the season. But I think the players need to take the responsibility for how this has gone, because you haven't made... Look, as much as you lost Courtney Vine, you lost Charlotte McLean, the defence hasn't been a massive worry. Yeah, it could be better, but it could also be a lot worse. And maybe you haven't plugged the hole that Courtney Vine's left. But there's players in there that are good enough to at least... You look at the side overall, they should at least be a top six side. The fact that they're in a bottom two position, the players need to take the responsibility for themselves, because frankly, they're good enough on their day to be higher. And the fact that they're not, the onus has got to be on them. Ante Juric, I think the only thing that I could probably pin on him is maybe he could be a bit more consistent with his front line. Pick what you think is going to be your best option. Stick to it. Maybe he's in a bit of panic mode, but also, if you've got players that are underperforming, you can't reward them by playing them week in, week out either. So he's in a tough position as well. But I look at this side, I think you should be doing so much better than you are. The fact that you aren't, that speaks to a probably larger issue, and it speaks to maybe they're getting too comfortable with how they've been going in recent years. I think success is a given. I don't know what the issue is there, but frankly, I think there's players in that side that probably need to have a good look at themselves before anyone in the media starts pointing fingers anywhere else.
And I think that individually they all have so much talent, but it's just not gelling well. So I agree they aren't performing up to their individual capabilities. The reason I say maybe Ante needs to look at the squad a little bit is just that they're not gelling well. They're not clicking. You know, you've swapped out Dos Santos for Vine from last year, and that, as you said, they're not like-for-like players. You know, Vine is very much about her pace, getting in behind, quick on the ball. Dos Santos is far more technical, likes the lot of feet, all those sorts of things. So they're not like for like. Then you've got kind of a front three without a clear goal scorer in it. And you've got a midfield that just, I agree, it's starting to rectify itself. They're learning each other a little bit, but certainly at the start of the season, it did not look balanced at all. There wasn't a clear defensive player in the midfield. And you know, the attacking players weren't getting shots off or goal scoring opportunities off. So I just think individually they're all good players, but building a team, you know, as you know, we've seen before, building a team isn't just putting big names on a park. It's also making sure that they balance each other out and go well together. And that's something that Sydney haven't nailed this year. And as you've said, often in the past, they've stolen big names from other clubs. And sometimes they've turned them into Sydney FC stars, and sometimes they haven't. You know, you bring up Wirtz. Wirtz wasn't getting consistent game time at Sydney FC, despite the fact that she was phenomenal for Adelaide. She came to FC, was fine, has gone back to Adelaide, and she's phenomenal again. So maybe they're not getting the best out of their players or playing people in a way that actually suits their style, and they're just getting great players and trying to force a team together. I think individually players need to step up a bit more. But yeah, I think just the way that the 11's put out each week, it doesn't really work in my mind sometimes.
What probably speaks to enough of Sydney FC's issues right now, we're going to go into the Matilda squad now, and no Sydney FC players in there, which, look, probably Courtney Vine probably did a lot of the heavy lifting in that area in the last few years, but the reality is the biggest club or biggest women's football club in Australia, you'd think they'd have at least one representative in there. And, you know, you look at players like Abini, what else are you called? Dos Santos, maybe he's pitting her on the edge. There's players that you probably think, okay, yeah, maybe, but the fact that they've got no representatives maybe speaks to another issue in itself. I want to talk about that very quickly before we wrap up. The Matilda squad has been announced. Bit of A-League flavour, not as much as what the last squad had, considering this is much fewer games and all within an international window, which means our players are available and free to be selected. So looking at it overall, keepers, Mackenzie Arnold, Tegan Micah, Chloe Lincoln from Western United. We're looking at defenders. Natasha Pryor's managed to retain her spot. Ellie Carpenter, Steph Catley, Charlie Grant, Winona Healy, Claire Hunt, Alana Kennedy joins her. In the midfield, Cooney Cross, Daniela Gallage, Katrina Gorry, Emily Van Egmon, Claire Wheeler, and Tamika Yeller. Probably no surprises there. Looking at the forwards, a standout name probably in this squad altogether. Lainey Fryer gets her first Matilda's call-up. Unfortunately, not with her twin sister because Sian is out injured at the moment. Probably coming in to replace her, actually, when you think about it. Joining her as well, Michelle Heyman. Holly McNamara returns to the squad after her injury. Caitlin Ford, Mary Fowler, Hayley Rasso, Caitlin Torpy. Decent squad, one that we've kind of become accustomed to and come to accept. But from those Chinese Taipei friendlies and even the Brazil friendlies as well, it looks like the biggest winner out of that is Tash Pryor. She's been able to retain the squad. She played fantastic in those games as well, so I don't think it comes as too much of a surprise. But is there anything that stands out from that squad to you?
I like what you mentioned about twin replacing twin, and we chatted a little bit before about like-for-like changes. You can't really get any more like-for-like than twin for twin, right? So I think that's...
it's actually uncanny how similar they play as well. Like they genuinely seem like the same player on a football pitch.
Style of play is very similar. So I think it's a good move on the Matilda's part. I like the squad. I think it's really great that Tash Pryor retained her spot because she's, you know, been performing well in the A-Leagues, and of course those recent friendlies from Matilda, she was an absolute standout, you know, did not look like a debutante at all. So it's great for her to be back in things. I'm kind of surprised that her and Heatley are both in it. And the reason I say that is because in my head, they're similar profile of player. It's also interesting that Heatley's been put in the defenders camp, which I would always put her in. But in the last few games, she's been playing a little bit in the midfield too, which is I wasn't necessarily a fan of. So I like that she's been lumped back in the defenders sort of portion of things. Yallop, it's good for her to be back in from the A-League. As I said earlier, she's been playing really well at Brisbane this season. Found a really nice patch of form at the minute. I think the rest of the squad looks good. Mary Fowler, it's great for her to be back in. I mean, obviously, she only missed the last sort of squad, the last friendlies because of, I guess, fatigue or not wanting to travel all the way. I'm not 100% sure, but it was, you know, it wasn't an injury or anything like that. And she has been playing phenomenally for City. You know, the recent brace against Arsenal, just scoring goals and scoring really quality goals, good assists too. So I think she's been playing really well on the wing, which is interesting because she often plays number 10 for the Matildas. I wouldn't mind seeing her play on the wing because she's in really fine form there, and she's been put in this forward camp here in the list that I'm seeing now from that the A-Leagues have posted. Holly McNamara again. It's great for her to be back because she's had struggles with, you know, the ACLs, and she's been a player that's been touted as, you know, one of Australia's best young players at the moment. She's so quick, so explosive on the ball, gets, you know, goal scoring opportunities on the regular. So it's great to have her back in there. I like that we're bringing new players through. I've said this before sometimes that the Matilda squads of the last few years might not have enough kind of young players in the squad just to experience things, even if they're not getting amazing minutes, just being around things. You'd rather, in my mind at least, I'd rather a young player get in camp, get to all the training sessions and get a few minutes in a game than someone who's in their late 30s. To me, like, what value does it necessarily bring? If they're an amazing impact player like, say, Michelle Heyman, then maybe I'm a different story. But in the past, I've found that some players almost take a spot away from a young player who might benefit more from just being in a squad and not getting as many minutes. So I like that we've sort of got newer players in, like Fryer, McNamara, Pryor. I'm glad I didn't say Fryer and Pryor back to back because that could have caused me problems. But even Galich, who hasn't been around the squad as much as I would have liked in the last couple of years, having her back in there is good. So I like the look of this squad. I think it's quite balanced. What are your thoughts, Cody?
I don't think it's much different to you. I think Fryer's an interesting one. She's, look, I'm not saying this maybe as a dig at her, but I do get frustrated. I think it's been a feature, not just in the women's game, but in the men's game as well, the FA to bring in players almost as a knee-jerk reaction to a good bit of form. Usually I like to see, you know, maybe 12 to 18 months of good football before a player's rewarded with a national team cap. But look, Fryer's definitely got ability, and I'm going to back anyone that wears Socceroos and Matildas jersey. So whether I agree with the call-up or not, if she comes in and performs,
well, who would you take instead?
Yeah, that's probably
who
the
would
hard
you take instead then, Cody?
That's a hard question, isn't it? There's not one actually thing I can actually think of off the top of my head. So I can't really argue with it, can I?
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, it's not necessarily a dig at Fryer herself. And the reality is she's there as well. The reason why she's probably there is because they fill in a gap that Shan's left. So, you know, you've got to fill it up. Why not fill it with one of the best players in the A-League Women's at the moment? Like, it does make sense in a way. But, that's more of a general comment. It does, because it's not the first time we've done it, and we've done it in the past, and it's come back to bite us it's come back to bite us. So, look, I hope this goes well. I hope she does well. I can't think of, off the top of my head at the very least, there's probably someone floating around. It's like, oh, yeah, that probably could have been one. But and at this stage, at this moment, I can't think of anyone else that should take that spot. So, you know what? Good luck to her. I actually hope she does well, and I'm not praying on anyone's downfall. When it comes to this, I like to be proven wrong.
For me, a few notable exceptions. For me, a few notable exceptions are Nevin, who, again, I don't mind her not being in the squad because I don't find that she always adds much in terms of, you know, games. She often gets on late and doesn't play many minutes. And I think Charlotte Grant is, you know, the clear wing back substitute at the minute, so that makes sense to me. Chidiak is also not in the squad. Again, this. Plenty of young, talented midfielders in there at the minute, and Chidiak, again, wouldn't be getting that many minutes in my mind, so I'm not overly disappointed by that. One selection that does... She's always in the squad, right? She just recently played her 150th game, I believe it was, but Emily Van Egmond, in the last few camps she's played, I don't think has added that much. She often plays small minutes or just, you know, I find that I guess she is often around and she's a veteran player and all of that. But I think maybe someone who's a little bit more exciting, a bit more of a flair, you know, X factor player coming on late in the game might be more beneficial in this tournament. But, you know, she's sort of a mainstay of the squad, so that, you know, doesn't surprise me all that much. But other than that, I don't think there's any other notable omissions. I guess Courtney Vine, but she's still on her mental health break at the minute. And of course,
she
Sam
hasn't
Kerr's
had a season
still.
Either, so that wouldn't
Yeah,
help.
so Sam Kerr also, you know, not only is she out with injury, but she's also dealing with a pretty public trial at the minute. So interesting to see what happens there. That one, Cody.
Yeah, I don't know if that's one we can go into too much, just because it is an open case and I don't want to say anything that gets us sued, because we don't exactly have a lot of,
Good
lot of
call.
money, so I'm not running that
No,
risk.
I'm not sure they're suing us for much, but interesting to follow along, that's for sure. That's all I'll say.
Aren't these things always? We're going to slowly start to wrap things up, but there's one thing that I want to talk about very quickly before we do finish. There was a post by a player that you just mentioned, actually, Alex Chidiak, kind of taking the piss out of what a Sydney fan or City fan said to her during the Melbourne Derby. Her caption was, "Shit City reject, trademark City fans 1 February 2025, control colon cyber pitch," which I hate that name, first of all. That's a stupid name for a pitch or a ground. Sorry to control colon cyber. You don't make a good name for a stadium. But I saw this, and it's probably an argument that I've seen come up on Facebook, and it's just made me a little bit curious, where it sounds like it wasn't necessarily a group of people. It was one guy with a megaphone blaring at her while she was taking a corner. A bit rough, but the premise of just yelling out to her and saying, shit City reject. I want to get your thoughts on it, because I'll be honest, like, just hearing that in general, I don't think there's too much of an issue with it. If how this person said it played out is true, maybe a bit, probably a bit much. But look, there's been well worse things that fans have said to players on a football pitch. This genuinely just seems like a bit of banter. And seeing what Alex Chidiak's personality is like, I can't say I know her, but I can imagine she's probably posted that to take the piss a little bit. And there's people that have gotten genuinely upset by this. But where do you stand on this? Because on one hand, I think it's kind of funny. But on the other hand, I can understand why some people might be upset.
I think it's okay. But I think it's okay given that it's Alex Chidiak receiving it, I guess. Because we know her personality. She's pretty publicly, you know, I guess, like, strong's not the right word, but she's okay to engage in a bit of banter with fans and just with, you know,
she's
the
got a
game.
Bit of personality.
And I think it's, yeah, she's got a bit of personality. She's tough. She'll look after it. If it was being yelled at a 15-year-old kid or something, I'd be less okay with it. But I think that goes almost without saying. I worry sometimes that women's football is made a bit PG and a bit family-friendly, and it isn't as exciting as it could be. Like with the men's game, you know, those rivalries and, you know, the screaming out at players as they're trying to take a corner, and you've got, you know, the COVID one in and the red and black army at the other for derbies, you know, getting all fired up. That's what makes the game really exciting. And I worry sometimes that women's football is a different atmosphere, and it has its pros and cons, right? Because a very family-friendly atmosphere means there's kids running around and watching their idols and all of that. Those are good things, but you know, it's not as exciting or as passionate as it could be, I think. And this is certainly a passionate fan yelling out these things. Might be a bit far, but I worry sometimes that it's a bit too much of "you go, girls, we all got this," and not enough hatred, I guess.
You need a bit of banter in there as well.
You need a bit of banter, you need a bit of passion, and City and Victory, they should hate each other. They should be, you know, kind of screaming out stuff sometimes. It shouldn't all be a friendly kind of kick around. And I think that is something that all across the world, the women's game sometimes doesn't try to foster.
Yeah, it's a, like you said, it's a Melbourne derby as well. It's like, there's got to be a bit of hatred. There's got to be a bit of beef. You want to have a bit of fun with it. And look, I'm definitely of the opinion that there's a line that shouldn't be crossed. You see it in the men's game, but look, there's a different crowd there. It's probably different expectations as well. Whether people want to see the women's game go in that direction, I know there's a lot of people that don't necessarily want to, but you also can't sit there and say, oh, we've all got to sit here, hold hands, and jump around a circle and sing Kumbaya. As long as you're not going to a point where like you're hurling out like a proper offensive insult, like there's things in the A-League women's season this season that have been a lot worse, and I definitely agree shouldn't be said to people. But this is something that you look at and go, look, you say it's your star player that's crossed the other team's star player that's crossed the divide. Is it a bit much that someone it's one person with a megaphone blaring it in someone's face pretty much as they're coming to a corner, allegedly. I don't actually know the story. That would be a bit much, probably. That's look, personal opinion for me, if you've got less than 20 people there, you don't really need a megaphone. If there's not enough people there that the sound of you as a collective is louder than the megaphone, you probably don't need the megaphone. I do apologize. But in theory, if it's like a group of five or six people just like going shit, City Reject, and pointing at her while she's walking over to take a corner, that's kind of funny. I had a laugh. I thought it was great. I thought it was good banter. But you know what? That's just me. Maybe it's just you as well, Annabelle. So we don't know. Maybe we're in the minority and we're wrong, and people do want to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. We'll never know, I guess. But that is all we have time for tonight. Mainly because I do, well, not mainly because I want to go to sleep. I do want to go to sleep, but that is actually everything that we had planned. Annabelle, first, welcome back as well. Hopefully you've enjoyed your first episode back. You got anything you want to say before we head off?
I guess let us know if we should be singing Kumbaya, guys. Let us know what your vibe
And if that's the case,
is.
me and Matt will make Annabelle sing it the next time all three of us are on a podcast live
Yep.
so that
You
you all
better
can
not
hear
say
it.
yes then, because you don't want to hear that.
And we will make sure we clip that for the socials too. Really highlight it. Like I said, that is all for today. My name's Cody Ojeda. I hope you've enjoyed another episode of Front Page Dub, and we'll see you in a fortnight. Bye for now.